Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
It's more like Boris Karloff.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is all kicking off this morning. One side blaming the other for talking to the wrong people. The other side accusing them of working to undermine their credibility and leaking stories to the press. It's a story of broken promises, ultimatums and relationships gone sour. And that's just the wags at war, of course. We'll be talking about Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney a little bit later on. Meanwhile, back in the surreal world of politics, things aren't any smoother. Lib Dem leader Jo Swinson has been busy in Brussels having her picture taken with Michel Barnier and Guy Verhofstadt. David Sassoli, the new president of the European Parliament, has been having secret meetings with our Speaker John Bercow. And Boris Johnson is being called a traitor for attempting to keep Northern Ireland in the United Kingdom. Bizarre, isn't it? The Prime Minister was meeting with Irish Taoiseach Leo Varadkar around lunchtime today in a last-ditch attempt to salvage some kind of agreeable deal on the Irish border that the EU will find difficult but possible to agree to. That was in Michel Barnier's words, of course. It's great, isn't it? 0344 499 1000. Meanwhile, Parliament is still prorogued until Monday for the Queen's speech. We'll be talking to Nick Dubois, former Tory MP, to get his view on it all. Coming up later on, we'll be asking why there isn't already a ban on eating food on public transport. Surely it has to be one of the worst ever things to do. And we'll be popping down to City Airport this morning to keep an eye on those crusty eco-planks who are still bothering everyone in London. Haven't they been run out of town yet by the cops? 0344 499 1000. And we'll hear from one of the Labour Party's donors who fears they're facing an existential threat that could finish them off under Jeremy Corbyn. I don't think I'd shed too many tears, to be honest. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. That song, Things Can Only Get Better, may take you back to those halcyon days of Tony Blair becoming a very young and youthful Prime Minister back in 1997, for about 13 years before it all seemed to go wrong and the wheels all seemed to come off. I'm going to speak now to a man who will remember that very well, I'm sure. John Mills, entrepreneur, businessman, major Labour donor, or should I say former major Labour donor.
Still.
You're still a donor to the party. You've got a new book out in which you suggest that there's a sort of existential threat to Labour now from a variety of different places. The book is called Left Behind, Why Voters Deserted Social Democracy. We are in a very strange place right now, aren't we?
We are. And social democracy, which used to be the kind of governing party more or less everywhere in the Western world, is in charge now in Spain and Portugal, just about, but nowhere else. Mm. And why social democracy suddenly gone out of fashion and nobody's voting for it anymore?
Well, in this country, you wonder whether democracy's gone out of fashion because the people voted for something which still hasn't happened.
Well, I think that's true. I think there's a lot of disillusionment on that score as well.
Yeah.
And then no wage increases for about a decade for most people. It's all been part of a mix which has produced a lot of disillusionment and discontent.
And what do you think is the major threat to the Labour Party that isn't necessarily a major threat to perhaps any other parties?
Well, I think that what's happened to the Labour Party is it has moved significantly to the left. Mm. And I think there is quite a big constituency for the sort of leftist policies that the Labour Party's adopted at the moment. But I think it's going to be hard for Labour to become a majority government on that platform.
Mm.
And if you look at the polls at the moment, where Labour's in the low 20s, Labour needs to be up around 40-45% to become a governing body again, and it's going to be a struggle to get there.
Well, generally speaking, you would expect any Labour government, particularly under Theresa May's government, any Labour opposition, rather, to be riding very high in the polls, because Theresa May's government was woeful, quite frankly, and awful. And the fact that Jeremy Corbyn couldn't seem to get above that government in the polls. It's a bad reflection on him, isn't it?
Well, I think it isn't very good reflection on the Labour Party at all. And my thesis really is that if the Labour Party is going to get back into being in control of government again, what it needs to be is a broader church than it is at the moment and more social democratic. And that's the problem, because social democracy at the moment is in eclipse. And the question is, how do you get it back?
And what would you describe as social democracy? I mean, how would you sort of outline maybe the three main sort of planks of that?
Well, I think it's a moderate left policy with some redistribution, mixed economy, trying to make the free enterprise system that we've got work reasonably fairly and well. I mean, this is very much the policy that was pursued by moderate left to centre governments for a long period of time after the war.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why it's gone wrong is because economic growth has been so slow. I think the whole redistributive angle on it all hasn't worked very well either. But there's also a cultural gap, which is very important, which has opened up.
Do you think it's also something to do with the way society has changed as well? Because society has become less industrialised, if you like, and more kind of run by small businesses, which are by far the bulk of businesses now in this country. It's not so much the huge conglomerates or the big nationalised industries that are, you know, important employers in this country. It's the smaller businesses, which tend to be, you know, perhaps less slavishly aligned to one party or another.
I think that's partly true. Mm. We're becoming more and more of a service economy, and it's more difficult to get trade unionism into service organisations. But I think the biggest single change has been the deindustrialisation which has taken place, which has opened up an enormous gap between the prosperity of London and most of the rest of the country, which just hasn't got enough to sell to the rest of the world now.
Right.
And as a result of this, suffers from all sorts of deprivation.
Mm. Well, that's what we mean. I suppose when you look at the way that Brexit has divided the political world, in effect, in this country, so it's no longer now just about, are you a Tory, are you a Labour voter? It's now about, are you a Remainer or are you a Leaver? And so Labour is kind of struggling, I think, to hold on to that working class vote, much of which, in certainly the northern parts of this country, is voting to leave the European Union. Labour now saying they're a party of Remain.
Well, I think that's right. And I think the big cleavage, really, in the country is between people who have done well out of globalisation, which includes quite a lot of the kind of metropolitan elite where Labour leadership's drawn from.
Mm.
But you've got large swathes of the country in Wales and the Midlands and the North, which have done pretty badly out of globalisation, where there's a great deal of discontent, and that's where the Brexit vote came from.
Yeah, and some of the changes that the Labour Party made when they were in government under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, for example, you know, devolution, I think harmed them more than it did them any favours, because more or less, you know, Scotland was more or less a Labour country, as was Wales. And those both have now been lost, in a way, by the Labour Party.
Well, it is interesting to see what's happened there, because I think what's occurred is that a lot of the fuel for this SNP, the Scottish Nationalist Party, has come from all the disillusionment that people have got about politics and about living standards. And in Scotland, it's gone to the SNP, whereas in England, it tended to go more towards Brexit and Leave. And right across, as I say, Wales and the Midlands and the North, you had this wave of voting for Brexit, which I think is the same sort of fundamental protest vote.
Yeah. And do you think that that vote holds up in a general election? Because obviously Jeremy Corbyn at the moment, despite asking for one for many, many months, has now decided he doesn't want to have one yet. We may have one yet before the end of the year. But there are some sort of cephologists who would say in a general election, those Labour heartlands will still vote Labour. Do you think that's true?
I think this is the really big $64,000 question as to whether that will happen or not. I think the Conservative government is banking on the fact that they'll pull over large numbers of Labour voters because of the Leave stance that they've taken. Now, whether that's actually going to happen or not, I think remains to be seen. I think there's a lot of antipathy to the Conservative Party in Wales and the Midlands and the North, which may stop that occurring.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people who think that we are in line for a total realignment, really, of politics in this country, and that we will no longer be looking at a Tory government or a Labour government, and we may end up, like many European countries, having sort of coalitions for years to come.
Well, I think that's possible, because I think it's very difficult to see, unless the Conservative strategy works out, which I think it may not, how we're going to not finish up with a parliament where you've got the, as it were, the opposition split between Labour and the Lib Dems, on the right of the centre, you may well have the Conservatives, plus the maybe the Brexit Party, and you finish up with nobody having a majority, and it's very, very difficult to see how coalitions that are stable are going to be formed out of any of the parties that are in Parliament.
And you're still, as you say, a donor to the Labour Party. You're still a very successful businessman. I mean, are there any circumstances under which you could see yourself not any longer being a donor to the Labour Party?
Well, I've been a Labour Party supporter all my life. I'm a kind of a tribal Labour supporter, really.
And there are not many of you left.
No, I don't think we're as few as all that. But I'd like to work within the Labour Party to try and pull it back to what I see as probably the most fruitful way ahead, which is to get better at running the economy, you know, better at getting redistribution going, particularly about rebalancing the economy between London and the regions, and also changing the culture a bit. I mean, I think one of the problems the Labour Party's had is the gulfs opened up between the sort of middle-class people who vote Labour, many of them done pretty well, and more working class supporters who've done much worse.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to Labour MPs who basically say we are no longer the party of the working man. We are now the party of the sort of intellectual Marxist types who have been very successful in life. Most of them have been to university. Many of them are Guardian readers. Some of them even used to work for the Guardian. And it's a completely different view of the world from those perspectives, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, the Labour Party's always been successful when it's married together this sort of middle class idealistic vote and the sort of more practical working class vote. I think the danger the Labour Party is running into now is it's piling up votes in places like London with the middle class support that it's got, but it's in danger of losing the working class support in these other regions of the country. And Labour needs both to get back into power.
So would you recommend to them, if you were asked, that they should not announce themselves as the party of Remain?
Well, I understand where Jeremy Corbyn's come on all this, being reluctant to become too much of a Remain party. And the reason for this is that I think the danger is that Labour just piles up votes in the metropolitan areas where there's very strong sentiment for Remain, but leaves behind the people in the north and the Midlands and Wales who've got to be drawn along too if Labour's going to win power.
Yeah, but it can't appeal to both, apparently, because it can't be Remain in London and Liverpool and then leave in Sunderland, can it?
Well, I think that to some extent what Jeremy Corbyn's trying to do is to hark back to what Harold Wilson did in 1975 when the last referendum took place on EU membership, when Harold Wilson allowed both cabinet members and everybody else in the Labour Party to vote whichever way they wanted and to campaign each way without the party splitting. I think that what's happened now is that the Labour Party is trying to corral everybody into the Remain camp, and that, you know, I think is a bit of a dangerous strategy.
Do you see Jeremy Corbyn surviving?
Well, I think he's the position of the Labour leader is pretty strong, so I think the chances of there being a kind of revolution against Jeremy Corbyn is pretty low. Whether the affluxion of time will get change in place, I think, is more probable sooner or later.
But it is a party which is kind of riven, isn't it? Because you've got the Tom Watson side of things, and in a way Keir Starmer kind of falls more, I suppose, naturally with him. And then you've got Jeremy Corbyn and Momentum. And never the twain shall meet, it would seem.
Well, I'm not sure that the divisions are... Well, I think there are very substantial divisions, yes, I agree with you. I don't think they're necessarily terminal, because the Labour Party's always been quite a broad church. But I think what you have got is that a majority of MPs in the House of Commons who are pretty well social democrats, whereas the bulk of the Labour Party membership is more democratic socialists, further left, more in favour of public ownership, more in favour of taxing the rich, more in fact of sort of broadening out the control of the economy. And there is a tension there.
There is, certainly. Now, your book is out, I think, already as of yesterday, Left Behind, Why Voters Deserted Social Democracy and How to Win Them Back. Published today, is it? Or yesterday, rather?
Published yesterday.
By Civitas. Is it available in all the usual places?
I hope so.
Have you sent Jeremy a free copy?
I think he is getting one, yes.
Is he? Because he might want to read it and find out how to get the voters back.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's a good idea. John, thank you very much indeed. John Mills there. Still a successful businessman. Still, are you pro-Brexit, by the way?
Yes, I've always been in favour of leaving, although I must say I'm not very happy about the terms on which it looks it's likely to happen.
Well, if you find out what they are, you can let us know. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed. John Mills, the book is called Why Voters Deserted Social Democracy and How to Win Them Back. Can Jeremy Corbyn do that? Will he ever say yes to an election?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Rebel, rebel, you torn your dress. Rebel, rebel, your face is a mess. Rebel, rebel, how could they know? Hot tramp, I love you so.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. I'm delighted to tell you that I'm now being reunited with an old mate of mine, Mr. Donald Cameron MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. Welcome.
Hello there. Hello and welcome. The rebel, rebel, indeed.
Welcome to London. Now, I'm going to kick off with a great tweet that I've got here from a comic who's called Mark Nelson. He says, "What is it like to be Scottish? We're about to be eliminated from the Rugby World Cup by our oldest ally, the rain." Because you know this typhoon is coming, right? And they're going to cancel the game, which means Scotland won't have a chance to qualify.
But it's called Haggis Barra.
It is called that, yeah. It's got a remarkably similar sounding name to Haggis.
It's quite good because it means that we can withdraw gracefully and say we could have won it.
Because, of course, with the now expanded Euros...
Expanded
Euros and expanded World Cup, Scotland has still not qualified, despite
but
the fact
the
that...
the thing
you know,
is, we could have qualified.
Yes.
It wasn't for the Haggis Barry.
The Haggis Barry rain. Now, you've just come down from Glasgow, where you own a number of very, very famous hostelries and clubs, notably The Garage. I mean, everyone that I know who's ever been to Glasgow has been at The Garage.
The Garage is better.
And you've still got, have you not... Got the tunnel?
No, I got rid of that.
You still got
sadly.
The cat house, though.
Yeah, I've got the cat house. That's the longest running rock club, I think, in the world.
Yes, and in fact, was somebody famous not there recently?
Yes, that well-known rock heavy metaler, Lewis Capaldi.
What was he doing at the cat house? Did he take a wrong turn?
I loved it. No. He tweeted that. This is great.
Right.
He actually knew some of the songs. And
great publicity.
The
now, I should also
them.
Tell people you've had quite a checkered sort of history in the terms of the music business. I mean, you're now a bit of a manager as well, but you put Oasis on at Loch Lomond.
Yes, that was a long time ago.
Which was a long time ago. Yeah. You used to put on Marilyn Manson,
still do them.
There's lots of stories that you can't tell on the radio.
Yeah,
about
too many.
And what about this new act that you've got that you're doing?
Well, I manage a young lady called Stephanie Cheap, who's starting to make waves up in Scotland.
I was going to suggest you might want to come down. I was going to suggest you might want to come down and go on James Wells' show, but we're having a bit of a feud at the moment, so it depends on how that goes.
Well, you and James?
Yeah, just a little feud.
Oh, that's a shame.
Nothing important.
But, you know, then just ignore James and speak to Ash.
Yeah, well, that's
he's
what
he's the
I'll
main
do.
Man of the show.
He is. He absolutely is. Now, you came down on the train yesterday. How did that go?
What a journey. What a journey, yes.
Is there anything that anybody in Britain can do anymore? Because I don't think there is.
Well, they did it well. That in LNER, whatever you call them, they did it very well. Right. They delayed the train because, first of all, the one in front had went in fire.
Okay.
So we went down the Durham Coast. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Then they delayed it again because somebody, unfortunately, got run over by a train, got squished.
Well, this is another different train.
This was another train in front of us. I'd managed to take somebody out, so, you know, that was pretty sad.
Right.
And then the third one, but the best one of all, an escaped handcuffed prisoner running across the lines, dragging a policeman behind him. You're not catching me!
They're not supposed to protect the railways from that kind of thing.
Well, maybe the guy was just trying to get his handcuffs off by throwing the policeman in front
of
the line.
That movie. So how late were you then getting into London?
2 hours. But,
just
you know,
the 2 hours. So are you going to...
I must admit, the staff were absolutely fantastic.
Are you going to apply for a refund, though?
Of course.
Because that's very difficult to do. They make it as hard as they possibly can.
Well, no, the guy in it, that's why I quite like this train company, because they turned around and told us we could, because we're well over the standard half an hour, so we can claim for the full amount.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
Well, all right, so let's talk about Scotland, because I used to live up there. That's how we met. Uh-huh. You're still writing a column for the Sunday Post.
Yes.
I saw that last weekend you were writing about the new law that makes everybody a criminal who smacks children's hands.
Children, yeah, it's terrible. I mean, we were brought up in a different era, you know, getting, as I said in the article, we were getting slapped.
You were getting the belt.
I got headbutted by a teacher.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm the music teacher of all people.
That's ridiculous.
Badoosh, bang.
Right.
But,
that's Glasgow for you.
Well, the bringing in laws has been the first of everything up in Scotland. It wasn't just Glasgow.
Right.
This was happening all over. But it's something I think it's went too far.
Yeah. I've been talking to a few people up there, and they say that, look, nobody outside of the politicians actually wanted this law brought in. Because I heard somebody being interviewed and being asked, look, at what point is it a criminal offence? If you slap your son or daughter's hand, you know, does that make you a criminal?
That's going to be, you could potentially be criminalised, but it puts the kids up for blackmail, doesn't it? I mean,
fortunately your kids are old enough now that you don't want to whack them, because they might
They're old enough now that you really, really want to do whack them, headbutt them, stick the boot in, you know, and stop them being Extinction Rebellion characters.
How are they about that? Because my daughter Emma, who is relatively sensible most of the time, she doesn't like it when I get stuck into the Extinction Rebellion types.
I would say that one of my children is very much on their side.
Is she?
And
she doesn't
obviously
clue herself
I'm an old fogey that knows nothing.
Of course you do.
Yes.
And you don't care about the planet either.
I don't care about the planet.
Well, you drive around in very big cars.
Yes, I do. Yes. Belching gas fumes everywhere.
It's a shocking state of affairs.
I know, it's terrible. But by the way, before you go on, I've got you a lovely present here. I brought it over from...
That's very nice of you.
I drove 100 miles out my way in Portugal to get this bottle of wine. Only to be told they'd none left to come back 2 weeks later. I says it's Portugal.
I did
actually go back 2 weeks later. So here is a lovely bottle of Estremoz.
That's very kind of
you. It's one of the top wines you can get.
I have to say, I can now reveal that you were the person that recommended probably the most expensive place I've ever stayed in my life over in Portugal, where I took the kids.
It wasn't Airbnb, was it?
No. Certainly was not. And I mean, you know, we don't mind spending a bit of money, but we were slightly taken aback by the price of the buffet. We did a lot of the self
cheese toasting.
We did a lot of the self catering option on that one, but it was great, beautiful place. Tell us about the SNP though, because you famously came out, and you and I have had plenty of rounds about this.
Scottish independence.
Now, have you worked out yet that it's a really bad idea?
No, it's not a bad idea. Independence, I think Britain is broken. I really think it's fallen away. I don't think it'll ever come back again. But personally speaking, I think the SNP are making a hash of it as well.
Yeah, they really are, because they don't seem to do anything now, the SNP, apart from just launch lawsuits against the Prime Minister up in the Edinburgh High Court.
I was on a TV recently talking about that, and I just think, hold on here, this is not why I voted you guys into power. Yeah. I voted you guys in to, you know, get the mandate for independence and self-governance, whether we like that or not, but not to go to court every time, you know, something goes wrong.
Because you can't, that's not going to work, is it?
I mean, it's who's paying for it? And I think the SNP should withdraw from Parliament.
Yeah.
They don't want to be. Why should we be there?
They should withdraw from Westminster altogether. They just keep saying that they want to remain in the European Union. They keep saying that Scotland voted to remain.
Yeah.
But in fact, it didn't. You know, 60% of people.
Well, 68% voted in the referendum to 68% to remain in the EU. I wasn't one of them. There was about a good million people out, up there that didn't. But that's not the point. The point is you should respect the result. I really believe that of any democratic election. I think we all do in here, and we all do most of it.
Well, we do.
Places. And that's not what's happening.
And also, you can't just go around saying, oh, yeah, but nobody knew all the things that they know now.
Absolutely.
It's rubbish.
Do it, get this one out the way. Then, if we're allowed, which is another thing, to have an independent referendum, that's fine.
But then
respect the result of that. Otherwise, if we have that referendum and people don't like the result because Scotland wants to leave, they're just going to take us to court, aren't they?
Well, I mean, that seems to be the way forward now. But, I mean, I was watching just the other night on Channel 4, they've got a little politics spot after Channel 4 News, and they had this SNP MP in Edinburgh doing a little sort of voiceover of a piece, right? And she was interviewing loads of people about whether they wanted to stay in the European Union. And they were all European kids. Now, look, I know that Edinburgh is a very cosmopolitan place, and I don't have a problem with people living there from Europe, of course.
They were all from Germany, weren't they?
No, but, I mean, they were all saying, oh, yeah, definitely we want to stay in the European Union. You would say that. But she's also born in Australia, right? Now, I, as a Scot, living in London, my parents were both Scottish. I was born in London, but I could still play for Scotland if they were, you know, wanted
to. Yeah, that'd
be
good. You'd probably do better than what we're doing at the moment.
But the point is, I don't get a say. You know, I don't get a say in the future of the country, which is ostensibly...
How far do you go back?
It's one generation.
Come on to the Romans, you know.
Well, it's one generation.
At the end of the day, the parameters were set for the last election, for the referendum, and we lost.
What I'm saying to you, and you should actually take this on board, right, because if you got the English to vote for Scottish independence, they'd all vote for it. You'd all be gone.
Listen, if it was my country, I would.
Well, that's the point. So you're unusual, though, because you want to have independence, but you don't want to be in the EU.
No, I want democracy respected, because I don't believe that we can have a referendum and then ignore it, and then expect Scotland to have a referendum and expect that to be, you know, go through. Mm. I just think that's wrong.
Right.
You know, it's just a mess.
Now, Matthew Wright and Kevin O'Sullivan, two other mates of mine who come on after this show, apparently they're doing a show from Glasgow on Monday. I don't know why they're doing that, but...
is it open?
Have you got any advice for them?
Well, take an anorak.
Yes.
A wee scarf.
Right.
They can pop in and see me if they wish
to. I don't know where they're doing it from.
I'm just off West George Street, on West George Street.
In fact, you've been moaning about that, haven't you? Because
yes.
Sucky Hall Street now has become a pedestrian precinct.
Well, that's further up the road, and the what was meant to be the Music Mile has became a long period after the Art School Fire churned up. You couldn't
have they sorted that out yet, the Art School Fire?
Oh, no, that's they've made the street accessible to pedestrians and most of the traffic, but that is that's going to go on for years. A blame game in that one,
it really is.
Passing the buck, it was
now. We've got, I'm told, Cool My Mind by Stephanie Cheap. So, should we have a little listen to it?
Yeah, why not?
Let's have a listen. In a dream, I can't help it. Oh my goodness gracious me, I feel like I'm 17. Love the way he looks at me, I can't help it, I can't help it. And she's from Glasgow, right? Is she?
No, she's from Hamilton.
Oh, Hamilton?
Outside of Glasgow.
The famous Hamilton, as in the Hamilton Academicals.
The Hamiyakis, aye.
And that famous building that looks like the UN.
Well, I think it's the council building.
It is.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you to something else, because over the whole Brexit thing, people have been saying, you know, if you're in a band and you're touring, it could be a problem if we leave the European Union. But these are the same people who said that we're going to run out of toilet paper, that we're going to run out of all sorts of other interesting things that we will no longer be able to get. I don't believe that you're going to have trouble touring just because you're not
Well,
there
is going to be
Union.
Problems. They're definitely, because because artists have to fill in carny forms and that tell it. The Europeans, what gear is coming over, what equipment they're moving, and similarly the other way. And
they don't tell them about all the gear they're bringing, do they?
Well, maybe I don't know about that.
No, of course not.
I'm sure they get it over there.
I'm sure.
But it's going to be add-on... A lot of unnecessary, I think, form filling, and it's going to start costing because they'll start ramping up the cost for filling these forms in. So it's going to make it more difficult. But that's up to Gov and all that to sort it out. And if they can sort it out quickly, then the pain shouldn't be for too long. But It ain't good that way. I think music has no boundaries.
It shouldn't have. It really shouldn't. But then it might well be that some of these countries shouldn't have quite so many regulations either.
Well, I think we run the worst.
Well, you can tell me that.
Or France. France will be
better. So what about McLeod Enterprises in the next year? What is happening? Are you expanding? Are you getting... You used to own a couple of restaurants, didn't you?
Yeah, the 7-8 clubs, 2 restaurants, and then Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling came along and the RBS and mucked it all up.
Oh, dear.
And I think as they did for a lot of people, yeah. But I'm quite happy where I am at the moment, to the most successful clubs in the world, and looking, as we always do, at possibly another couple of ventures. One, it's very good.
It's all right, we haven't got that many.
Another world famous venue.
Okay. Well, you're looking very well on it, I have to say. That doesn't go to bed before 6 a.m. every night.
Pipe and slippers.
It's obviously, yeah. It's
obviously
suiting you.
Well, lovely to see you.
Now, I'll be drinking this later. I'll be seeing you later
as well. Yes, I hope so.
Secret location, if my car ever arrives. But well, that's another story, which I'm not going to get into yet. Donald McLeod, thank you very much.
Donald Cameron McLeod of the Clan McLeod. I'd love to be here.
See you thank later. You. Now, listen, here's what I'm going to tell you about. Yesterday, you may remember, we were due to get James Whale on this show to talk about baldness, because he is the most famous bald man at Talk Radio. He, of course, agreed to do so, having told our producer, Con, that he would be willing to come on. He then didn't come on, claiming that he didn't get a phone call. Now, last night, I got a phone call, unexpectedly, from Mr. Whale. But, of course, he didn't inform me before he called me that, in fact, he was going to put me straight to air, which, technically speaking, is an offence. So let's have a listen to this.
Phone Mike Graham now. Don't call him before, just phone him and give him straight to me. Let's see if he's around. He's probably in the pub. And if any of you have warned him I'm going to do this, there'll be trouble later.
Hello?
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 Why do you keep saying hello?
I'm just saying hello back.
Have they warned you that I was going to ring you?
Who's this?
You know perfectly well who this is.
No, I have no idea who it is. Who is it?
Well, why did you say hello when I said hello in a funny voice?
Well, when the phone rings, normally that's what you do. You say hello. Why don't you just say no?
Well, because on those occasions, I don't answer it.
Oh, I see. What, you mean like earlier on today?
See, I knew exactly you knew who it was. And if I find one of these
I haven't had nuisance phone calls, as you can imagine. A lot of people don't like me because I'm so successful that my show is doing so well that more and more people dislike me. You know what that's like, James. You used to have a successful show.
Anyway, he kept me on the phone for ages, right? There's half an hour or so of it, which I'm going to try and have somebody put onto YouTube, because he kept trying to rile me, he kept trying to sort of insult me, kept trying to sort of make out that I was somehow a lesser broadcaster than him. I've got a great deal of respect for James Whale. He used to be a terrific broadcaster, you know, in his heyday. But the thing is, he's, you know, not quite as good as he used to be, is he? Let's face it. But that's all right. He's welcome to come back on the show any time if he's willing to talk about the old baldness problem that he seems to have suffered from over the years. So I wait to hear from Mr. Whale for the next instalment of Whale versus Graham. Let's talk to Rob, who's in Battersea. Hello, Rob.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, just a little quick one to let you know. I had the same problem from James Whale.
Did you?
I sent... at the time, he was very, very pro-Remain, as you probably know.
One of the things I said to him last night was, you know, the trouble with you, James, is you keep changing your mind. He keeps going from being pro-Remain to now being pro-Leave to the other night saying he thought we maybe should just leave it all alone because it's too difficult.
He's not much different to Jeremy Corbyn. He's actually nailed to the top of the fence. He doesn't really know which way to jump. Well, I sent a text in saying, well, look, if you love Europe so much, why don't you go out there and live out there, you know? And, in fact, it's on his promo. This man needs to be brought to account. Get his own phone number. Phone him up. And they phoned me up. But the producer phoned me first, you know, through the producer. Oh, yeah.
I didn't get that. I didn't get the warning phone call. My phone just rang. Luckily, I happened to be at home, and I answered it.
Yeah. I know it, and I've kept you off guard, didn't it? You know, but I still had all my ducks in a row and gave him, you know, as good as I got. And, it was a week after he actually changed his mind, because he says that he doesn't like the way that Europe's treating us. But I think he's just needed a little shove off the top of that fence, the same as Corbyn.
Do you think he's a bit confused?
I think he's always been a bit confused, hasn't he? Whether to do radio, whether to do television. I mean, it used to be good when he'd done television. Now he's struggling a little bit with the YouTube with only, 200
visits? Oh, I don't think you should be unkind to James. He's doing very well for an elderly gentleman. He's doing just fine.
I I always listen, yeah. He's great entertainment.
Yes, no, he is. He's terrific. He's on tonight at 7 o'clock, I think, as well. Rob, thanks very much indeed. Rob there in Battersea. Lots more of you to talk to, of course. Lots more of you want to get on between now and 1 o'clock when Matthew Wright's going to be here with Kevin O'Sullivan, 0344 499 1000. Don't forget, you can, of course, tweet us at Talk Radio and you can text us as well to 87222. Text will cost you 25p plus your standard network rate. Joanne says, yes, I remember Whale back in the days of the original Talk Radio. I've never listened to him recently. He's a boring has-been. That's very harsh. I'm not having that, Joanne. I don't want those kinds of texts and tweets written to me because that's very unfair. All he had to do was come on and talk about his baldness. That would have been fine, wouldn't it? But then, I guess he was busy. He said he was in the pub, which is quite surprising. If you like piña colada, welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. I'm delighted to say, and I didn't know this until earlier on today, actually, that it is, in fact, London Cocktail Week. And so to celebrate London Cocktail Week, we have a special guest who is here with us, and his name will sound very familiar to all of you who like a drink out there. His name is Alfred Cointreau, and he is, of course, the sixth generation of the Cointreau family. Alfred, welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Hello, Mike. How
Thank
are
you?
You?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I'm
Thanks
fascinated.
For the invitation.
I'm fascinated by your job, basically, because you've been in the family business since 2010.
Exactly.
You travel the world, basically making cocktails, meeting mixologists, meeting bartenders.
Exactly.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Making cocktail, but also testing cocktails
and tasting them as well. And Cointreau is one of those things that I think a lot of people like to drink, but with something else, if you know what I mean. I mean, I quite like to drink Cointreau on its own,
yeah,
to be honest. I discovered Cointreau when I was about 16.
Okay.
Very many years ago.
Right. And you keep it?
Yes, of course. I've always got a bottle of Cointreau in the cupboard. I don't drink it an awful lot, but it's a staple in an awful lot of cocktails, isn't it?
What we say is Cointreau is versatile,
yeah,
so you can appreciate it neat on ice, more as a digestive.
I like it on ice, actually. It's nice.
You can make a lot of cocktail with Cointreau. You have, yeah, more than 350 classic cocktail recipes created with Cointreau.
Uh-huh.
And also you can cook with Cointreau, so you have so many ways to appreciate,
yes,
it.
Yes, and Cointreau, the family is interesting as well. They were set up, this whole thing, in about 1849,
exactly,
in France, in a distillery. But your family originally were bakers, I understand.
Exactly. We created another speciality of France. We created La Baguette.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. We didn't create La Baguette.
See, I would have bought that. I would have believed you.
After we became confectioner,
yeah,
and in 1849, with a dream of two brothers, we became distillateur liquorice.
Mm. And why the orange flavour? Because was it particular? Because you would think in if you think about oranges, you think about, yeah, Spain more. Or you,
yeah,
think,
exactly,
about Seville, right?
That's why. In the 19th century, the orange was considered as a rare and exotic fruit.
Mm.
So the second generation of the family, my great-great-grandfather, Edouard, wanted to create a rare and exotic liqueurs. So he travelled all around the world, through Spain, Africa, and South America, and he brought with him sweet and bitter orange peels.
Okay.
Not the fruit, really the peels, because inside the peels you have the essence, the soul of the orange. So after 10 years of research, he perfected the right balance between sweet and bitter orange peels, and that was Cointreau, the orange liqueur recipe was born.
So it's more about the peel than it is about,
exactly,
the actual fruit.
And it's more about, yes, the fruit itself, the connection to this fruit, the golden fruit, if,
yeah,
you want. For example, my grandmother, I remember, she gave us for Christmas the orange, this fruit, because it's rare, yeah, and exotic. Today, it's quite easy to find through the years oranges, but in this previously, it was more difficult.
Right. It's interesting because in this country, of course, oranges mean to a lot of people something like marmalade. You know,
yeah,
so
exactly.
You made Cointreau, we made marmalade.
Exactly.
So there's something wrong with that.
And that's the beauty of Cointreau is everybody already know more or less the orange, have a connection through their cultures, and with Cointreau they can appreciate it on a different way, and they can use Cointreau on a mix, play with Cointreau, if I can say, on different ways. So could be in a cocktail, could be in a food, could be as a shot, for example, as ever you want. And a part of my job, as you say, is to travel all around the world, meeting people who work in the spirit industry, meeting bartenders as well. And it's very impressive to see how they play with this iconic bottle with the same recipe inside and how they appropriate them.
Okay. And what about the, you've got some cocktail mixers there, you've got some cocktail shakers, a bottle
exactly.
of Cointreau. What are you going to make for us today?
I brought my tea and my cocktail tools.
Okay.
So I would like to share with you an iconic cocktail made in 1948 by Margaret Sims, the Margarita.
All right.
So the Margarita is a delightful cocktail with 30 ml of Cointreau.
Yeah, and usually some tequila as well, right?
Of course.
It's not unusual for me to drink tequila this early in the day, but you know, I'll give it a go.
Alors, tips for people who like to cook or who like to drink: when you try a new recipe, the best timing for the day, the best hour of the day to test it, is around 11 a.m.
Okay.
Because at this time, your nose and your mouth are the more open to detect flavors.
Okay, and you recommend having just one then, presumably, then? Otherwise, you lose the rest of the day.
Just few sips or just smell it.
Okay.
It's
they say about champagne, is to be drunk in the morning is the best time.
You can. Depends of your mood, that depends of what you did the day before,
Okay. So you've got this Cointreau on ice, have you, I think?
Yeah.
And you're going to mix it up now?
Okay.
Are you?
So 30 ml of Cointreau, 50 ml of tequila.
Yeah. Okay.
And a fresh lime juice, freshly squeezed.
Very nice.
So 20 ml of fresh lime juice. When you mix a cocktail, please use natural ingredients, not sour mix
or
stuff like that.
You don't want to use that lime juice.
Exactly.
No.
I remember when I learned the Cointreau recipe, it was 8 years ago. I was with my grandfather, and my grandfather told me, okay, Alfred, it's time for you to know the Cointreau recipe.
Yes.
As you can imagine, I was really excited, and he started to explain me everything about the sourcing of the water, the alcohol, the sugar, and the sweet and bitter orange peels. And at the end, I asked him, what is the secret? What is the secret ingredient in Cointreau? And my grandfather told me, what did you expect, Alfred? That we put chemical products, fake flavors? He told me, no. The recipe of Cointreau is to source 4 ingredients and 4 ingredients 100% natural.
Okay.
So that is really, really important. So when you mix your cocktail at home or in your bar, please use natural ingredients as well.
Okay. And like a lot of brands, they kind of branch out, don't they? They do, like if you were, say, for example, maybe a gin, there are now lots of different flavors of gins. I mean, presumably Cointreau, you just keep it as the original.
Exactly.
You don't change it. You don't suddenly go, oh, let's make a lemon-flavored Cointreau.
And that is a challenge for Cointreau. It's to keep the consistency.
Yes.
Since the beginning, we want to preserve the authenticity. So that is a job of the master distiller. Today, she's the second woman as a master distiller, Carol Carton. And her job is to travel through Spain, Africa and South America to meet the oranges producer, and to select the best orange peels to make sure she can replicate exactly the same recipe.
Yeah, okay. Which is fascinating. And you may not know the answer to this, but how many bottles of Cointreau would you say are produced every single year?
We produce when we have a demand. Uh-huh. So the more bottle you open and the more bottle you finish, the more job we have at the distillery in Angers. If I remember well, last year it was more or less 12 million bottles.
Okay.
After, the only thing with Cointreau is we are limited at one distillation per day.
Right.
Because we have to put the orange peel, the alcohol, and the water the day before the distillation.
Okay.
We have to leave them over the night, and the morning after we can start to heat the pot still to start the distillation.
So it's still quite an old-fashioned method, really, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. You do not have a computer or anything to manage, if I can say, the pot still. Still, the hand of the human, the hand of the master distiller, manage the pot still. So it's really traditional. So we are limited at one distillation per day, and today we do not distill every day of the year, so we can do more.
Well, I'm ready to drink something now, so if you don't mind mixing it up for me.
Exactly, alors.
That would be lovely.
I remove the water to keep just the ice inside.
It's a great sound, though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a lovely sound.
So a little bit for the shaker, and the rest in the glass, because I prefer the margarita on ice, especially on the morning. easiest to drink.
I think that's what I'm going to tell the boss, you know. I had my margarita on ice this morning, so, you know, don't worry.
Great. So my grandmother was, for me, a little bit like the teacher of cocktail. And she taught me one thing, so you can see it at the radio, but when you check, always check with a smile.
With a smile, it's true. It looks a lot better, actually. It's true, because when you go to a bar and the bartender is miserable,
exactly,
you don't want to be there. I mean, if he's not happy doing the job, you really don't want to drink there, you know?
So, and that is really something very, very important, to have a happy face on the bartender and to have an interaction with the bartender. What I like to do is to go just after the opening when the bar is not too much busy. Mm. And when the bartender gives to me the cocktail menu, I do not read it. I speak with the bartender and I want that he makes a cocktail just for me.
Yes, you know? Right.
And that is, in general, they are really, really good.
Mm.
So I checked our three ingredients. Cointreau, tequila, and lime.
Okay.
And now I stir it through the glass.
Looks very nice. It looks the right colour.
Exactly. Et voilà.
Because the whole thing about drinking cocktails is the experience of it, isn't it?
Exactly.
You watch it being made, you savour it. Mm-hmm. You know, London Cocktail Week is quite big now, isn't it?
Exactly.
What's happening, you know, from now until, is it the weekend, I think, right?
Say, we started the 4th and it's until Sunday.
Okay.
So you have a village at Shoreditch with a lot of brands who have stands making activation. You say everything is about experience, so a ritual of service, new cocktails recipe, new experiences, and through the bars as well, you can have different activation. For example, yesterday I was behind the bar of Sketch.
Okay.
A really, really nice party, really fun party. And tonight I am between 6 and 9 p.m. behind the Kensington Hotel bars. So if you want to go to see me in action, if I can say, do not hesitate
to
come.
We will do that. Okay, and should we taste?
Of course.
Is it ready?
Santé. So I'll let you...
Thank you very much.
I'll
give it a little sip first. And what's your view of straws about drinking?
Oh, yeah, you have a big debate about straws, about using plastic in...
Oh, that's lovely. That is lovely. Beautiful.
So, yeah, you have a big debate about straws and plastic behind a bar, especially. So I really like to go straight to the glass. I don't want to have any...
I'm not a fan of straws, and I don't like paper straws.
So,
you know, I'm quite happy if you don't want to have plastic straws, that's fine. But the paper straws are terrible. They just disintegrate, you know?
So after you have metal straw, glass straws made with straws. After, you have some people who are really sensitive with the teeth, so they prefer to get a straw. It's really, here again, a question of taste, a question of how you prefer to appreciate your cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, well, Alfred, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for the invitation, Mike.
Lots
really
of
appreciate.
Places for people to go and drink Cointreau. It should be inspired now to go and buy a bottle of Cointreau.
So, so everybody knows a bottle of Cointreau. A lot of people know one or more cocktail with Cointreau, but the best way to understand, to feel Cointreau, if I can say, it's to go to Angers.
Okay.
It's on the west side of France, in the Loire Valley.
Can you tour around the factory?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a distillery, not a factory.
My apologies.
You have a factory for a car or for shoes, for example. It's a distillery for Cointreau.
Well, it sounds good.
The distillery is open for the visitors, so do not hesitate to make a
Next time I'm over there, I should go and have a look.
Do not hesitate.
Alfred Cointreau, thank you very much indeed. Happy London Cocktail Week. I'm going to continue with my margarita while you listen to the road traffic report. This is Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.